Good morning. Shabbat shalom, everyone. Who was here last night for our meeting? Oh, a good portion of you. You understand your Hebrew really well. So let's try that again. Shabbat shalom. Sabbath peace is what we strive for every day. I want to thank you all for allowing us to come and present to you today. We belong to Bet Shalom Balivav, which is a Jewish Adventist congregation, synagogue, that meets and is part of the ministry of the Vancouver Seventh-day Adventist Church. Our goal is to reach out to Jewish people and non-Jews as well, to strengthen and enrich the lives of Seventh-day Adventists, to understand the truth, because the oracles of God were given to the Jews. And Ellen G. White in 1903 said, "It is a strange thing to me that there were so few who felt a burden to labor for the Jewish people." In 1905, she said, "There will be many converted from among the Jews, and these converts will aid in preparing the way of the Lord." Converted Jews are to have an important part in the great preparations to be made in the future of to receive Christ, our Prince. And finally, in 1907, just before she passed away, she stated, "There are among the Jews many who will be converted and through whom we will see the salvation of God go forth." Today there is a great movement among Adventists to reach out to God's chosen people. There are Adventist synagogues all over the world, in Jerusalem, Florida, California, Oregon, Washington, New York, Connecticut. There is many. And making an active outreach to reach the last chosen people. Because Ellen White said, until we do that, the time will not come. And there is a real emphasis on making that happen. Last night, we welcomed the Sabbath in a traditional, culturally Jewish, doctrinally Adventist method. And this afternoon, we're going to have a discussion. You can find it to be pretty interesting and informative about the law and the appointed times and how they relate to the gospel message. How many of you are the first generation to be an Adventist? How many of you or your parents were the first generation? How many your grandparents? How many your great-grandparents? We got one, two, three, half a dozen. My family joined the Adventist Church in 1880. Anybody know when the Adventist Church was formed? In 1863, right? 63, 64. And as a family historian, I tracked my family history very far back into the 1100s. But I didn't bother with a religious affiliation. To me, it wasn't a big point. About 2 years ago, my wife was invited to a Torah study. A Torah study is a Jewish Bible study. And my wife says, "Hey, let's go." And I says, "Okay." So we arrive, and instead of having a Bible study, what it was a group of Adventists who were working together to form this group, Bet Shalom Balivav. So to make a long story short, we launched from there. We became a active synagogue. When I grew up, obviously an Adventist, and I lived with my grandmother many of those years because I went to an Adventist school, and she lived close to, some of you may know, Columbia Academy up in Battleground, Meadowglade. And my grandmother, every Friday, was busily preparing for Sabbath. She would clean the house diligently. She would cook food, fresh bread every Friday. And as the Sabbath approached, she would put out the fine china and light two candles. Sounds like a typical Adventist home, right? Well, maybe not the fine china and maybe not the candles, right? Now, I want you to keep in mind, my grandmother was a leader of the Dorcas. For those of you that are old enough to remember what the Dorcas was, community. She was a leader in their church for her whole life. And yet, she had these customs. And when we were invited to this group, I started looking into my family history on the river. I was curious about customs and what our religious affiliation. Well, I had the history. I'd tracked everybody when they came in. And when they come into this country, typically there's an immigration card. And it'll list religious affiliation. On my great-great-great-grandfather's card, there was no religious affiliation listed. And I thought, that's kind of strange. And so I went and talked to my great aunt, who is still alive, and I says, you know, how did we become Adventist? Why are we Adventist? I mean, you joined the church in 1880. The Adventist church was barely going, right, at that point. And she says, you know, she says, I don't know. She says, but I do know that our grandfather was so, thought the Sabbath was so important that every week he would take my mom and dad, my mom and dad to church, the only Seventh-day keeping church in the area, and then he would leave, and then he'd come back and pick them up, and every week. And I says, well, what do you mean he dropped them off? I says, he didn't go in the church. He says, oh no, he absolutely refused to go in the church. And he wouldn't tell us why. But he felt that the Adventist church, that the Seventh-day church was the most important thing for his children, that they needed to worship on the Sabbath. So that made me ask another question. Where did they come from? And I knew the village, but I went back and I again took a look at it and went, oh, they came from a village in Prussia. Now, Prussia is a part of what was Germany and Russia. And they immigrated to this country in 1878. The Prussians had just started what is called the pogroms, or a systematic elimination of anybody that was Jewish, right? And so they fled that country. Well, then that led me to the question, why would a Jew take his children to a Christian church that he had just fled Prussia because the Christians were killing their families? That only left me with one possible conclusion. To him, the Sabbath was more important than how he felt about Christians or Christianity, right? That's, you know, that made me really think about it. And then I started studying about Judaism. I started becoming very involved in it. And I go to a synagogue on a regular basis, and not because I have any intention of becoming Jewish, but because in order to reach somebody, you have to know how they think and how they feel. How many sides does a book have? How many? One, two, three, four, five, six. A book has six? Does not a book have seven sides? Because if you open it, it has an inside. The Sabbath is like a book. You can look at it. I can learn a lot from the book. I can learn, oh, this is called the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. And I can say who it's written by, Rabbi Shmuel. And I can read on the back, and it'll tell me a little bit about the inside of the book. But how much do I really know about this book until I open it up? The Sabbath is a lot like that. And so as we start today, we're going to look at the inside of that book. And I would like to start with a word of prayer. Our dear Heavenly Father, we come here before you to seek your guidance, to seek the truth of your Sabbath. Draw us to a closer understanding and teach us your word, and let the words that flow be those that you want us to understand. I thank you in the name of your Son, Yeshua. Amen. So when Elder Henschel called Elder Stan Bierman, now some of you may know him, right? I believe he was a pastor here. At the Oregon Conference, he says, we're interested in having a rabbi come and talk to our congregation about Sabbath. And Elder Bierman says, hey, we have an Adventist synagogue. Now, I'm not a rabbi. A rabbi is an ordination just like an ordination of a minister, right? You go to rabbinical school. They then, when you finish the school, you do your amount of time like a pastor does, and then you receive the right of a rabbi. I'm not going to do that because I'm not going to state that Jesus Christ was not the Messiah, because I believe absolutely he is the Messiah. So becoming a rabbi is not even an option. So it's very interesting when we look at that. So let's go inside the Sabbath and let's take a look. And I'd like to turn to Deuteronomy 5:12, which was our verse today. And I noticed in your pews, you use a King James Version, which is really a good version. And Deuteronomy 5:12 states, keep the Sabbath day to sanctify it, as the Lord thy God hath commanded thee. How many of you, let's have a show of hands, how many of you keep the Sabbath? Most of you. How many of you believe the Jews keep the Sabbath? Fewer number of you. How do you keep the Sabbath? Is it attending church? Is it that big dinner after church? Is it going for a walk on Sabbath? Is it spending time in God's Word? What if I was to tell you the Jews believe that rather than having kept the Sabbath, they believe the Sabbath has kept them? Right? They don't believe they keep the Sabbath. They believe the Sabbath has kept them. When I talk to people about Jews, most people say that Jews are rule keepers. They're people of the works. This is a Cliff Notes version of Shulchan Aruch. It's called the Kitzer Shulchan Aruch. And literally, this is a Cliff Notes version. There's two volumes to this, but Shulchan Aruch, which is the medieval law code, has 18 volumes, goes like this, and it has things like what to do when you get up in the morning, when should you pray, when should you wash your hands. And it was written in the medieval times to try and replace the Talmud, which is the oral tradition. If you have read the Bible, and Jesus said, if you have read Moses, you have heard about me. And then he says, so there are times when he quotes, you have heard it said. If you read in the New Testament, Jesus saying, you have heard it said, he is quoting from oral Torah, right? He is quoting from oral Torah. Well, if we look at Shulchan Aruch, if I look at page 171, it says, a person who desires to eat bread over which the blessing is recited must wash his hands before doing so. Turn to Matthew 15, verse 2. Matthew, Mark, Luke, right there at the start of the New Testament. And it says, why do your disciples transgress the tradition of the elders? For they do not wash their hands when they eat bread. Sounds familiar. Let's flip over to Matthew, or flip back a couple pages to Matthew 12, 1 and 2. Okay? At that time, Jesus went through the grain fields on the Sabbath, and his disciples were hungry and began to pluck heads of grain and to eat. And when the Pharisees saw it, they said to him, look, your disciples are doing what is not lawful to do on the Sabbath. Well, if we look in the Shulchan Aruch again, which is the law code, and it says, on the Sabbath, the outer shell of a garlic head, and this is a modern version that I'm giving you, that covers all of its segments may not be removed because it is considered to be husking, which is a derivative of the forbidden labor of threshing, which is what the disciples were doing, threshing. That's how the Pharisees compensated. Let's go to Matthew 23. So we're going to flip a couple more pages forward. Verses 1 through 3. Jesus spoke to the multitudes and to his disciples, saying, "The scribes and the Pharisees sit in Moses' seat. Therefore, whatever they tell you to observe, that observe and do." Right? Sounds to me like the Jews have a lot of rules and regulations. Also sounds to me like Jesus was in agreement with those rules and regulations. He said, whatever they say, do it. The final line there says, don't do as they do, however, if you read the final part of that verse. People who do not keep the Sabbath think of it as full of stifling restrictions, or of prayer, or of study, or that you can do that. I grew up in the 1960s when our church was a little bit legalistic. I say that kind of tongue-in-cheek, but Sabbath is not about rules, but it's about celebration and rest. It is about spending time celebrating with God. On the Sabbath, we try to be in harmony with God on the path to His eternal holiness. You know, there's a word that is said, seldom said, a word for emotion too deep to express. The word love. I have a love for my wife, who's sitting here in the front row. I have a love for my children, right? But what about the love that we have for the Sabbath? Can you have that same level of love for this day? I know if I ask any of the mothers in this audience about the love of their children, though when they grew up, they may not have that same level of love. They may wish they used a stick on them a little more than when they were younger. I know my mom did. But I don't know a single mother that would not lay down her life for a child. I've never met one. But is the love of the Sabbath, what's so extraordinary about that day? What is so precious that it should captivate our hearts? Psalms 32:6 states, "The likeness of God can be found in time." That time is the Sabbath, which is eternity in disguise. It is the time that we're supposed to spend in learning with God. One of the most distinguished words in the Bible is the word kodosh, holy. A word which has, more than any other, is representative of the mystery and the majesty of the divine. And again, indeed, it's a special occasion when it first occurs. Anybody remember when the first time the word holy was used? It occurs in Genesis verse 2, chapter 2, verse 2 to 3. It says, "He rested, blessed, and hallowed the Sabbath day. He declared it holy." Sabbath should not be an interlude of your life. It should be the climax of your living and your time here. What would the world be without Sabbath? The Sabbath is the most precious present mankind has received from the treasure house of God. Now, in the Talmud is misunderstood by many people, but the Talmud is a collection of stories, rulings, commentary of Jewish tradition. And sometimes they took that and they created the Shulchan Aruch and they built all these rules. Like, when you get up in the morning, you can take no more than 3 steps before you wash your hands and pray, and 3 more steps and pray. There's some pretty orthodox rules, some rules there. But in the Torah, there's a legend that relates to a time when God was giving the Talmud, when God was giving the Torah to Israel. He said to Israel, "My children, if you accept the Torah, of course, is what we commonly know as the five books of Moses. But the Jews don't think of that as being the Torah, just for your information. That is one section of the Torah. Then you include the rest of the Old Testament. That's the Torah. This book, every one of you that has one of these, has a Torah. Because it is not just limited to the five books of Moses, or the prophets, or the writings. It is also the Jewish people, if a Jew accepts Jesus Christ, and they become a Seventh-day Adventist, they would believe that Ellen G. White was Torah, because she was a prophet of God. The prophets set Torah. Now that is a very Jewish thought. That is not, I'm not going to advocate that as being law. God doesn't say that the Torah is this. But Jesus Christ himself quoted the Talmud. And going back to what I was talking about, God says, if you will accept the Torah and observe my commandments, I will give you for all eternity a thing most precious that I have in my possession. And Israel answered, what is that precious thing that thou will give when we obey your Torah? God said, the world to come. Show us an example of the world to come, said the children of Israel. The Sabbath is an example of the world to come, was God's reply. The Jewish people believe that unlike the Day of Atonement, the Sabbath is not dedicated exclusively to spiritual goals. The Day of Atonement, we're going to talk about that a little bit this afternoon, is about, you know, getting yourself right for God. But Sabbath is not that reason. It is for the soul and the body. For comfort and pleasure are an integral part of Sabbath observance. Man in his entirety, in all his senses, must experience Sabbath. Last night at Kabbalat Shabbat, our Friday evening service, we had challah, a very sweet bread, because we engaged our tastes. We drank some grape juice. Again, we engaged our taste. We are to use all of our senses when we reach in involved with the Sabbath. The Sabbath is a reminder of two worlds, this world and the world to come. It is an example of both worlds. For the Sabbath is joy, holiness, and rest. Joy is a part of this world. Holiness and rest are something in the world to come. To observe the Sabbath day doesn't mean to merely obey or to conform to the strictness of a command. To observe the Sabbath is to celebrate the creation of the world and to create the seventh day all over again, the majesty of holiness and time. So let's turn to Exodus 20, verse 8. Genesis, Exodus. It says, remember the Sabbath day to keep it holy. 6 days shall you labor and do all your work. I have a question for you. Is it possible, where was our host from last night? He's an electrician. Is it possible to do all your work in 6 days? I have never gotten all my work done in 6 days. There's always something ready for Sunday morning or Monday, right? But what the verse means is rest on the Sabbath as if all your work was done. Or another interpretation would be to rest even from the thought of labor. The turbulent ocean of time and toil, there are islands of stillness which man can enter a harbor and reclaim his dignity. That island is the seventh-day Sabbath, a day of detachment from things, instruments, and practical affairs. Sabbath must be a time of peace, tranquility, and grace, and love. The Sabbath is no time for personal anxiety or care, for any activity that might dampen the spirit of joy. It is a day for praise, not petition. I know many people that come, oh, I'm coming to praise the Sabbath. I'm going to ask God for forgiveness of my sins. The Sabbath is not for asking for forgiveness of sins. You have 6 days to prepare. Many, I can remember my mother, who wasn't quite as diligent as my grandmother, would wait till Friday to clean the house. Let me tell you, that's not a fun time. That's not a fun time. Not for the kids, I can tell you that. Oh, you have to do this. Oh, you have to. That's not a good thing, right? We are supposed to prepare ourselves as well for the Sabbath, so that when we enter into the Sabbath, we enter into it with joy and happiness and a longing to spend time with God, because God longs to spend time with us. And if we're thinking about what you've got to do, how is he going to spend time with you? He wants you to spend time with him. So when we look at Sabbath, we want to think about what and how we observe it. There are two aspects to the world. Just as the Sabbath is meaningful to man, and the Sabbath is meaningful to God. It stands in relationship to both, and it's a sign of the covenant entered into by both. The Sabbath is meaningful to God, for without it, there'd be no holiness in our world of time. There would never be a time for us to meet with God, to spend that special time. Just as a groom is dressed in his finest garments, so is a man on the Sabbath day to dress in his finest garments. Just as a man rejoices all the day of the wedding feast, the bride's dressing, so should a man rejoice in the Sabbath. Just as a groom does no work on his wedding day, so does a man give up his work on the Sabbath day. And that's why Jewish rabbis say the Sabbath is the bride. Right? The Sabbath is the bride. Now, do Jews believe that the Sabbath is an angel or a spiritual person? The idea of a Sabbath as a queen or the bride is not a personification of the Sabbath, but an example of a divine attribute, an illustration of God's love for each and every one of us. He wants to be married to us. He wants to be a part of our life. He wants to be the fulfillment of our lives. How can you truly be fulfilled as a single man unless you are married to a loving woman? Right? Very difficult. Very, very difficult. So God has that same relationship with us. He wants to have that relationship with us. To the Jewish person, observance of the seventh day is more than a practice of fulfilling the commandment. The Sabbath is a presence of God in the world. The reason why the Jewish people extend the observance of Sabbath to a part of Saturday night is to thank and show that they do not like to see the departure of the holy guest. Her parting evokes a deep sorrow, a feeling of regret. How many of you growing up had friends who would count down till Sabbath, right? As a matter of fact, they'd be looking at the clock, they'd look at their bulletin and go, oh yeah, there's the time. Okay, I got my watch, got my hand on the TV control. 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Or you would want to go get something from the store. And if you grew up in a small community, like this one probably 50 years ago, is not quite as small as it used to be, you'd start walking to the store on Sabbath, knowing that you would arrive at Fred Meyer's, which wasn't here then, exactly at sundown so you could buy something. Is that really the observance of Sabbath? In Jewish tradition, the Sabbath will start often as early as noon on Friday. Whenever we light the candles, the Sabbath has begun. And we'll go until late in the evening, midnight, because it is your time to spend with God. Are you really going to limit your time from 5:30 at night to 4:35 in the afternoon with God? Is that really all the time you're going to spend with God? Don't you want to spend as much time with God? Let me tell you, I am very happy when the candles are lit, because I don't care what's on the kitchen counter. It's not getting touched. Right? My grandmother growing up would not even, we would have this special meal, a hot, perfect meal Friday night, and then the stove would never go back on. She would not cook on Sabbath. She would not even turn a light on Sabbath. She didn't know why. She was Adventist. She was Adventist through and through. She would quote Adventist doctrine. She did not know she was Jewish. She didn't know why, but she just knew that she could not cook because cooking is breaking the commandment of work. In today's modern world with a microwave, it's pretty easy. You don't have to really sweat it. But if you think about a large family, like my family had seven boys, my dad's family, seven boys and one girl, and my grandmother, even to the day her husband passed away, had a wood stove in the kitchen. Now, how much work do you think it is for that woman to cook for seven teenage boys who worked a lot on Sabbath? How much work would that be? That would be a lot of work, right? Now, I'm not saying that we're not allowed to cook on Sabbath. Don't take that there. I'm just saying that in her way, so she would prepare the food on Friday that could then be served on Saturday without her having to do any work. It is mandatory on every person to be very, very serious, though, when making their preparations for, to be prompt and diligent for when the queen, the Sabbath, comes to your house. When all work is completed, the candles are lit. Just as creation began with the word, "Let there be light," so does the celebration of Sabbath begin with the kindling of lights. Things created in 6 days, he considered good. The seventh day, he made it holy. The Sabbath is not holy by the grace of man. Only God sanctified the Sabbath day. And when Sabbath is entering the world, man is touched for a moment with actual redemption. As if for a moment, the Spirit of the Messiah moved over the face of the earth. Exodus 31:14 states, "You shall keep the Sabbath day, therefore, for it is holy unto you." The Sabbath is where we find true holiness. The Sabbath day is separate and unique, but never far from the hearts and minds on the other 6 days. Jewish people believe that our life is a pilgrimage to the Sabbath. If you were to ask a Jewish person what day it is, they don't say Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. They will say, today is the sixth day till the Sabbath. Today is the fifth day till the Sabbath. Today is the fourth day till the Sabbath. Because the Sabbath is what is important, and every day they think about that. For those who gain eternity in a lifetime, there are those who gain eternity in a lifetime of study and devotion. There are those who gain it in one brief hour. One good hour can be worth a lifetime. The instant of returning to God may restore what has been lost in years of escaping from Him. My life was part of that. I walked that path away from God. But I believe the statement that if you raise a child, he will return to God. I know I walked away from God when I was about 21 years old, and I had 10 years that were not, they were a textbook. You want to know what the breaking the Ten Commandments are? I did that. Just take it out and put David beside every one, because I did it. But my parents raised me right. My loving wife helped and brought me back to the truth of Jesus Christ. One moment wipes away all that. The moment that we accept Jesus Christ as the Messiah. Is there any institution that holds a greater hope for man's progress than the Sabbath? It depends on what the Sabbath is to us. And if we as Adventists believe the Sabbath is a symbol of our redemption, is it not true that the Sabbath has kept us? Will it not keep us in the final days? The Sabbath law, Sunday law, almost passed in 1890. They're working on it again, worldwide. A pope stepped down. Hasn't happened in 600 years. That's no accident. Times are changing. In Hebrews, the writer urges his readers to enter into the Sabbath rest provided by Christ. After three chapters of telling them that Jesus is superior to the angels and that he is our apostle and high priest, He pleads with them not to harden his heart, as their fathers hardened their hearts against the Lord in the wilderness. Because of their unbelief, God denied their generation access to the Holy Land. In the same way, the writer to the Hebrews begs them and us not to make that same mistake by rejecting God's Sabbath rest in Jesus Christ. There is no other Sabbath rest besides Jesus. He alone satisfies the requirements of the law, and he alone provides that sacrifice that atones for sin. He is God's plan for us to cease from the labor of our works. Turn to Hebrews 4, chapter 4, verse 9. Verse 9 through 11. There remains, therefore, a rest for the people of God. For he who has entered his rest has himself also ceased from the works as God did on his. Let us therefore be diligent to enter into that rest. Lest anyone fall according to the same example of disobedience. So today I would invite you to enter into that rest of the Sabbath day. Thank you.